Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mike Shope.
Name any word in less than a second, I will tell you how many letters are in it. But I cannot do anything mechanically. I don't even know how to put a game together for three-year-olds.
And the Bulldog.
Fool me once. Shame on you. If fool me, we can't get fooled again.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Rolling along we go on a steamy one here in Western New York. I am the Bulldog. Mike has the day off today. Sal Capaccio, kind enough to sit in and co-host. And joining us right now on the Wester Hotline is one of our favorites, lead analyst from Pro Football Focus, now PFF, with all the Twitter handles because there's been a change there, I guess. Sam Monson is on the line with us. Sam, how are you? Are you adjusting to your new Twitter handle pretty well?
Yeah, things are going good. How about you guys?
We're doing good. Hey, here's a starting point. We'll get to the Bills eventually here, but I'm thinking more about just what you guys do on a large scale basis. You know, grading all these players and all this analysis that you're doing and the foothold, more than just a foothold you've got. I mean, you guys are now referenced constantly, I think, within football conversation. How do you feel like the evolution of that analysis is going? Like from where you guys started at to where you are now and maybe where you're going?
Yeah, I mean, I think things have come on an incredible amount since we've been doing this. Obviously, the process that we use is very similar. We've made tweaks and adjustments to it, but really the big area of development for us, even over the last year or so, has been being able to understand our own data better and use it to predict and project things going forwards. You know, we used to just be a team of guys that were collecting all of this data and providing it to other people. Now we have, we have a data science team in the building. We have guys with strong doctoral mathematician backgrounds, really smart guys that are able to use this data to start modeling and predicting and developing new strains of data that are way more useful than it was in and of itself. So we're creating these products like PFF's WAR metric, you know, like baseball wins above replacement, mm-hmm. And really kind of learning how to use the data in a way far in advance than we were a few years ago.
Where can it go? I mean, it just seems like every year we add layers upon layers upon layers. I mean, is there a point where you have to kind of maybe pull back and say we're just adding too much, or is more better, Sam?
No, I mean, I think it's just a case of understanding where the data is going to take you. So it's all this stuff like PFF WAR and being able to identify what the valuable components of play are. And this just helps everybody do their jobs. You know, you understand what aspects of player play is most important and what teams should be focusing on and where teams should be spending the money. So I think we still have a long way to go before we're at the point where it's saturation. You know, it's just a case of understanding what things to be paying attention to more than others.
How much do teammate effects play a role in how you do this? Like one thing that I know when we first started hearing about this sort of analysis in football, and I guess the same pertains for hockey as well, but there's fewer guys that would impact each guy as well. But like with baseball, those are all very individual skills. They're individual opportunities, right? You're manning right field. How good the center fielder is maybe has some impact on you, but not really that much. So I think it's easier to isolate and thus analyze one player's individual performance in that way. With football, you're a left guard, you've got a left tackle next to you, you've got a center next to you, and like their performance is going to have some impact on yours. Like how much have you learned in that area, if anything?
Yeah, it's something that we've only looked at on a surface level so far. And so far what we've looked at, it hasn't been, it's definitely, there's something there, but it's not a huge amount of influence. It's not a huge piece of the puzzle. How an individual player plays is a far bigger part of it than the impact his teammates have around him. But I think that's definitely part of what we'll be doing going forward, is understanding exactly how strong that relationship is and, you know, which positions it's strongest in and that kind of stuff, because that's how you really affect team building. You know, you start to understand when combinations are going to work and when they're not, and get a better handle on what a fit is going to be like when you either draft a player or you sign a free agent, really getting a better, more sophisticated understanding of what that signing actually does to your roster.
You know, Sam, there seems to be more of an acceptance of this type of thing happening now, the data, the analytics and sports, stuff like that. And I see players talking about it, tweeting about it, coaches. I know organizations are involved. You have relationships with them. Do you see that kind of changing versus the old school guard where, you know, the people who ran football didn't want to hear about that stuff before, but do you see that in your everyday, on a yearly basis, maybe more and more organizations, people in football are really investing and really kind of interested in this type of thing and using it?
Yeah, I think so. I think overall, league-wide, it's definitely become far more accepted and far more encouraged. Obviously, there's 32 NFL franchises, and there's really 32 different levels of acceptance, of integration, of competence when it comes to this kind of stuff. And some teams, you know, they're really at the cutting edge. They're doing extremely smart stuff. They have a team of incredibly intelligent people within their building, and they're using all of this data to, you know, create their own models and their own kind of things we've been talking about, independent of PFF, just using PFF data as a piece of the puzzle. And then other teams are not really that far down the road at all, and they're kind of taking what they're given and just using that, really trying to use that as their edge. And I think the other aspect of all this is, you know, within each building, there's a completely different dynamic across the league 32 different times. You know, some teams, the guys with the data and with the numbers are very well integrated with the rest, with the coaching staff, with the front office, and they have a place at the table. They're listened to. They understand how to convey the message to all those other parts in the building. And there are other teams where, you know, the guys running the numbers and the guys coming up with this interesting data, they know it's not going to be listened to by the coaching staff or by the front office. They're not able to penetrate that or break down that lack of communication. So, yeah, I think some teams are definitely doing things in an extremely smart way, and you can kind of see who they are really by the success they have. But I think overall, you know, the league is moving towards this stuff. The league understands collectively that this is the way it's going.
So it sounds like it's likely maybe all the teams have an analytics department, but maybe not all the teams use the analytics department.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, because everyone in the league would know, like, oh, we have to have this. Like, an owner might say that we have to have this. And, like, the GM would go, like, okay, fine, we'll go, we'll do that. We'll hire, yeah, there, we have them. We hired some data guys.
The Bills just hired.
Are we doing anything with them? No. Okay.
Yeah, the Bills just hired somebody here recently. His name escapes me, and that's kind of, it's not just head of analytics. Like, there is a big role for him in the leading up day-to-day operation of maybe helping out Sean McDermott, understanding the data that goes into it, not necessarily on game day, but all that stuff. But I want to piggyback that and ask you, in your experience with the Buffalo Bills and anything you know about them, do you know how far along they are and what they integrate or not, and where they are comparably to the rest of the league?
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, all of these teams are PFF clients, we can't really go into details
right,
about
right.
Teams gotcha, are which.
Gotcha.
So I'm gonna politely decline that one.
Okay. Right.
Sam Monson is a lead analyst with Pro Football Focus, and he's on the Wester Hotline. So running back value has been a big thing in the league, and it's, of course, you know, salaries. Melvin Gordon's talking about a holdout, and there's been some noise from Ezekiel Elliott. First of all, these players, I'm going to assume, are both graded very favorably. How about their value, though? Like, how much do you guys dabble in that, or is it merely just how productive a guy is on the field? Like, do you think it's smart for a team to not want to pay a running back big dollars? Like, how do you guys handle that part of it?
Yeah, we do. The more data we pull with this kind of stuff, the more it becomes apparent that running backs shouldn't be valued very highly in the NFL. And it sounds counterintuitive because, you know, running backs often get an absolute ton of touchdowns. They get a lot of yardage. And they have a really hard job. You know, those guys are getting pounded more than pretty much any other position down to down. But when you look at what's actually driving those numbers, it isn't necessarily the running back. The impact of the offensive line, the run blocking, has a far bigger impact on the overall production of the running game than the running back does. The box count has a better indicator of whether you're going to have rushing success than the running back. And the box count can be determined essentially by the offensive formation, by just how you line up on a given play. The strength of your passing game has a bigger impact on your rushing output than the running back does. There's a whole list of things that are essentially more important to being able to predict what kind of rushing success you're going to have than how good your running back is. And, you know, when you look across the league, when teams lose these running backs, if those other circumstances remain the same, they're able to plug in guys and replace the same production. You know, Todd Gurley was supposedly an MVP candidate. He goes down. All the other situations stay the same, and the Rams are able to get MVP caliber production out of C.J. Anderson, who was fresh off his couch. You know, unfortunately, as much as running backs kind of deserve to be paid well because of how tough that job is, it doesn't look like they are an irreplaceable piece of the puzzle. And, you know, if a running back is looking to break the bank, a team should probably be looking to move on.
And the offensive line, as you said, is such a key component. We've seen such a turnover here in Buffalo this year. I looked at one of your tweets that you retweeted about last year's O-lines and how the Texans and Cardinals kind of ranked near the bottom. I can't imagine the Bills had a very good grade. Their offensive line struggled last year. They've really revamped it. Where were they last year, Sam, and how much of a step can they take with the new players they brought in?
Yeah, it wasn't a good line last year. You're right. And I think they have made a big step forward. I think, you know, this line on paper may take a little while to gel because there are so many new pieces and so there's no kind of long-term experience of these guys playing with each other. But I think overall this line could end up looking like a reasonable unit by the end of the season. It may take a while to get there. But really what they need is they just need this line to get back towards an average level. They don't need it to be a fantastic unit. They just need it to not be a reason that this offense is struggling.
Right. And of course, you know, the line had problems, and no coincidence, LeSean McCoy had his worst season as a pro. Now he's still here. He's in the last year of his contract. He's making a pretty decent sum of money. Frank Gore's here now. The Bills added TJ Yeldon. They drafted Devin Singletary. How do you see their running back group as a whole? Like, are there signs, despite the line's struggles, that McCoy himself was not his, well, what LeSean McCoy has been previous in his career? Like, do you see the drop-off continuing for him, or do you think a better line will get him back to where he was 2 years ago?
Yeah, it's a fascinating group of running backs they've now assembled. I think what we're seeing is, or what we saw last year, really was a perfect example of what we're talked about, which is when the run blocking disappears, the running back suddenly looks like he's struggling and doesn't look like the same player again. I think if the line and the run blocking got back to where it was, suddenly you would see the old LeSean McCoy resurface pretty quickly. And, you know, Frank Gore is really an ageless wonder. It's amazing that he's still not just getting production, but actually grading well as well. He is playing at a high level despite that advanced age. And then Devin Singletary was a player who PFF college grades absolutely loved. He was, you know, among the best players in the nation at breaking tackles despite his small size and stature. His yards after after contact were phenomenal. His just general play was excellent. He was graded extremely well. So it's a kind of exciting group in the backfield if that run blocking does get back to where it was.
Yeah, I'm going to be – like, this is not something that would really be that interesting to you, I suppose, Sam, but they drafted a running back in the third round, and they've got all these guys here, and I am not going to want to see Singletary inactive on game days. Like, I think if you draft a running back in the third round in the NFL – you should find a way to play him, I think. And they've got too many guys probably to make that happen, at least right now. We'll see what, you know, we'll see what the preseason brings and if they make some kind of a move there. But I'm very intrigued by Singletary moving forward.
Yeah, I think he's a very talented player. And I think we saw at the combine he was asked to work out as a wide receiver as well. So there are teams there that think he has that kind of matchup versatility to be split out wide or to be split into the slot and make cause problems for teams on defense, even if he isn't in the backfield carrying the football.
We're talking with Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus here on the West Hur Hotline. I'm sure it's no surprise to you, Sam, that Josh Allen is still pretty polarizing, both nationally and even locally, with, you know, what he is able to do, not able to do, where he can go in his career. He came into this league polarizing, but a lot of that really stems from completion percentage and accuracy. I saw some quotes floating around today from David Cutcliffe talking about the difference between completion percentage and accuracy. So in all of your data that you collect, all the stuff that you watch, where do you separate the two? How do you separate them? And what are your thoughts on Josh Allen in that fishbowl, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's right. Conceptually, there's a big difference between completion percentage and being accurate with the ball. And we go about separating in a couple of different ways. We have an adjusted completion percentage statistic, which strips out things like throwaways. It strips out drops from receivers, spikes, you know, all the kind of things from conventional box score numbers that can skew completion percentage. But then we also track actual ball location data, you know, whether you put it in a guy's hands, whether you left it behind him and forced him to adjust, that kind of stuff. And we chart actual accuracy. And, you know, as much as maybe statistics can lie, in Josh Allen's case, I don't think they necessarily do. I think no matter what stat you look at, he's not an accurate quarterback. And I don't think that that's the biggest problem in the world. You know, you knew he wasn't an accurate quarterback coming into things. And the key is, can he make enough big plays to offset the fact that he won't be the most efficient quarterback down to down? He's not going to be a Drew Brees. He's going to put it perfectly in stride every single play and beat people through just being more efficient than they are. But he's going to make some big-time throws that those quarterbacks can't make. And that's how you just have to hope he makes enough of those to overcome the fact that he will never be the most accurate quarterback in the world. And then I think, you know, adding in a guy like Cole Beasley is the perfect way of treating that kind of quarterback, because, you know, everyone thinks that if you've got a big arm quarterback who's not the most accurate guy in the world, you go get the deep targets and you try and maximize those big plays. But Cole Beasley will get open underneath more than most other receivers. So you're essentially maximizing the margin of error that Josh Allen has on those shorter plays, because Cole Beasley is going to have a wider area to hit. He's going to be more open than some of these other receivers. So even if Josh Allen does leave it a little bit behind him, it'll be complete because he's got more separation than, you know, the last guy he was throwing to.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think his piece in this offseason is really intriguing to me, Beasley's, because I think we saw Allen struggle on some of those throws, and they're adding Beasley tells you that they want him to be, you know, at least competent throwing those sorts of passes. Otherwise, they wouldn't invest the money in a player to do it. And then there's the point about how open this guy gets and that being convenient for, you know, hopefully them having their eyes open about exactly what he is, right? I think the last thing I would want to hear from the Bills ever here while Allen is their quarterback is them trying to, like, thinking that they can turn him into a 65% completion guy, right, or something. Like, I just don't think that's going to happen. So, you know, and there were, I think, at least to our eyes here, Sam, you tell us if you agree, there was there was positive signs last year that Brian Daboll, sort of as the year went on, I guess particularly after Allen missed some games and then came back, that they sort of changed what they were doing on offense to an extent. There was Isaiah McKenzie, and that's when Robert Foster emerged, and Kelvin Benjamin and Andre Holmes sort of found their way off the team. And I think maybe what they did this offseason was another step in that direction.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Cam Newton is a really good example of how this works. Cam Newton, there's a lot of similarities in terms of he's never going to be the most accurate quarterback in the world, but he's got a huge arm. He can make spectacular plays deep down the field. And, you know, the Panthers have gone through like three or four different generations in terms of a game plan to make him a more efficient passer. First of all, they drafted a ton of guys that were like 6'5", and the logic was, look, these guys have a huge catch radius. Cam Newton can't possibly overthrow them. But 6'5" guys don't get open very often. So you're now forcing your inaccurate quarterback to put the ball in a tough spot every single play. The next plan was they tried to make him into this high efficiency, you know, quarterback underneath. And you draft a bunch of guys like Christian McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel. And you try and really shorten his average depth of target and make him a dink and dunk passer. And that just takes away what makes him special. So finally, they're starting to get around to this idea that if we just get receivers that will get open,
right,
we give him a bigger window to throw to, and he will be more accurate inherently because of that. I think the Bills have kind of hit that realization, maybe from watching the Panthers, but they're at least not, they don't have to go through the first couple of failed iterations to get there.
Right. What a concept. Just get receivers who can get open.
That should make
things a little easier for everyone, right?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, they really, it wasn't just in scheme, they did that, but in personnel too. I mean, they went with the, like you said, the catch radius guys to the smaller guys, the shiftier guys. On the other side of the ball, Sam, we love the defense here in Buffalo. I think Sean McDermott's done a tremendous job with what he's had. They had a rough start last year for six quarters. They did some different things, changed some things. Of course, Vontae Davis, we all know what happened at halftime of game number two. But from then on, they were tremendous. How good is this defense and how good can they be?
Yeah, I think they're very good. There's a couple of question marks around the defense, but I think overall there's a lot of talent on it now. Obviously, Ed Oliver being drafted as well adds a really fascinating prospect to that. Oliver is a player who the PFF grades always loved, but he always graded extremely well against the run and never quite became the pass rusher that we thought he would, given his obvious athletic gifts and his quickness and his ability to rush the passer. But when he started to dive a little bit further into the numbers, a huge amount of that was because they lined him up head up over the center as a true nose tackle a lot. And if you kind of remove those plays and you looked at just how he rushed the passer from any other alignment, his numbers were way, way better. So, you know, I think he's a lot more raw and unpolished as a pass rusher than a guy like Aaron Donald, who he often got compared to. But I think he has potential to be that kind of game-wrecking pass-rushing presence if he gets used, you know, as more of a pass-rushing interior player than he was in college. So Ed Oliver has the potential to really add to this defense and transform the front. And then with guys like Tre'Davious White and that safety tandem, I think there's a lot of talent on the back end as well.
How about Tremaine Edmonds? We're running out of time here. We don't want to keep you much longer, but I'd like to just hear you talk about his rookie year and maybe where he might be going entering year two.
Yeah, I don't think he played particularly well as a rookie. I think we saw flashes of the kind of player he can be. But his long-term prospects was always about potential. It was always about the fact that this guy, you know, was a teenager. He has incredible physical, you know, gifts, physical template to be a player. That's sort of 6'5", 250, fast. And I think we saw games last season where he started to understand it. And kind of improved as the year went on. So I think this is a big year for him to show that he's got that kind of development curve in him and he can become the player that everybody thought he could. But, you know, I don't think his rookie season was where we were ever likely to see that.
Sam, we really are big fans of your work, all of the staff at Pro Football Focus, and we appreciate all of your time here today and all the times in the past as well. Look forward to visiting again soon.
Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.